The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A link to some of Firestorm's partial catalog of books and zines, and also a full listing of their calendar of events, can be found online at their website at firestorm.coop. This week, I spoke with two members of the Southern Ohio-based group Appalachia Resist, which is a social and environmental justice group that has been active since 2012 in fighting fracking, frack waste, and injection drilling in their area. We speak about the camp, which is going to be held next weekend from the 18th through the 21st, about the schedule of events, and about how the two approach organizing. Also a little bit about anarchist organizing in small town Ohio. More about the camp and the group can be found at appalachiaresist.wordpress.com. But first, I would like to make this announcement. Last night, prisoners took over Holman Prison in Alabama. At around midnight, a fight between inmates escalated to include guards and even the warden. Staff fled, and the rioting prisoners have taken over general population, lighting guard towers on fire and barricading the doors. According to rumors, the incident began when an officer responded to a fight between two prisoners with excessive force and was stabbed in response. Quote, they brought the warden down, and the warden got to talking crazy, so they ended up stabbing the warden. And then after that, all the officers ran up out of the institution. That was like 12 a.m., 1 this morning, end quote. The warden and the officer's injuries were not fatal. There are videos circulating on social media of prisoners burning the control towers and opening all doors. Quote, we're tired of this shit. There's only one way to deal with it. Tear the prison down, one of the participants stated. At around 2 a.m., the riot squad and police arrived. They said they were waiting on daylight to move and try to restore control of the facility. At this time, people haven't heard from the occupied portion of the prison for a few hours, but it seems the authorities have not moved in, either. Friends and family of prisoners in Holman are asking that people pray for their loved ones. Holman's capacity is 1,002 prisoners, but it also has a segregation unit and death row, which are still under the prison's control. Prisoners in segregation have not received their breakfast meal 4 hours after it is normally distributed. General population at Holman consists of 4 open-space dormitories housing 114 people each, plus a 200-person annex, so there may be between 450 and 650 prisoners involved in the uprising. Alabama DOC has been increasingly unstable in recent months. Incidents of violence within the institutions have been stacking up. The federal government was on the verge of taking over the system due to poor management and budgetary shortfalls last year. An article from January 2016 about ADOC's failure to operate safe and stable prisons can be found at www.eji.org/node/1198. Also, news and video of this event can be found linked from our blog at ashevillefm.org. I'm speaking with two members of the group Appalachia Resist about their upcoming action camp that's going to be taking place. I don't actually remember when it's taking place. Can you remind me?
Yeah, so it's next weekend, which is, it starts Friday, March 18th.
Gotcha.
And runs through Monday, March 21st.
Word. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about Appalachiarisis. How long has it been around, and what are its main objectives?
So Appalachiarisis formed in 2012, just kind of a few people talking about. Basically, in 2012, there was fracking companies coming and trying to buy up leases all around the county. And I was living with a couple other people who, all three of us, have histories and activism and anarchism and radical politics and whatnot. And we hadn't really been involved in anything for a while. And then this company started buying up leases in the area. And, you know, what was the final straw, if I can use that, was we had been talking about starting a direct action group, and the final straw was when we heard a rumor that somebody was talking about starting a group called Slow Down Fracking in Athens County. And, you know, that just couldn't stand. And so we called a handful of people and started trying to find some other people who had interest in doing a direct action, and we took some time and figured out where we were going to do a direct action, and learned a lot from a lot of people about what was going on around here. And it turned out that injection wells were the bigger issue around here, and that fracking was possibly on the horizon, but not yet. And so before we even formed as a group or had a name, we blockaded the driveway to an injection well and shut it down for the day. And then after that, it got enough popular support in the area, and we, you know, this, that, the other, that it seemed like a good idea to keep doing it. And so we made a name and made all the little documents that you make as a consensus-based group and started organizing more action.
Will you describe what an injection well is briefly?
So an injection well is in the process of hydraulic fracturing, modern horizontal hydraulic fracturing, a ton of water laced with chemicals, toluene, benzene, diesel fuel, all kinds of things, a huge list of things, gets injected into the ground to force the gas out at high pressures. And a bunch of that water stays down there after the gas comes up. The water also comes up, and also water that was down there comes up, and that water comes up radioactive because it's, you know, up to several miles into the earth where there's just natural deposits of radioactive materials. And then they truck it to places. Ohio is a really popular place to truck it. Athens County is the most popular place in Ohio to truck it. And they inject it back into the earth into, often that first one that we blockaded was a repurposed vertical hydraulic fracturing well, essentially the old style wells. And so they inject it back into the ground and say that it's fine and it will never come back up. But the problem is that there are so many holes in the ground from all these other wells that connect to each other that occasionally, sometimes they surface through that, sometimes they surface through mechanical failures. And yeah, so that's the basics of an injection well. Chris, I might have something to add to that.
Well, but there's also spills that happen when the waste is trying to get into the well. So it can be for a variety of reasons. So at site, there's spills when they're taking the waste from the trucks into the wells, but also, like, there was a recent truck accident in Ohio, and a bunch of frack waste was dumped into a reservoir, which is currently being tested to see how toxic it is. So there's other things that happen around the transport of the waste that end up resulting in spills.
Yeah, that sounds highly, you know, problematic in so many ways, like environmentally, and I'm sure it's, you know, socially being done in places that are economically poorer, socially like disenfranchised in all of these different ways.
Pretty much a lot of them are in southeastern Ohio, Appalachian Ohio. So it's a lot of areas where coal mining was a big industry and have been pretty poor ever since then. And there's also quality of life issues with the injection wells for the people who live near them. Air pollution is potentially a big issue, but it's never been studied. So there's finally going to be some air monitoring going on in Athens County to see about that. But anecdotally, people who live really close to the wells, like within a mile, have been experiencing some symptoms of mostly the diesel-related VOCs. Sorry, I'm going into jargon. Like chemicals associated with oil and gas production, so like dizziness and headaches and nosebleeds and rashes and things of that nature. And then there's also massive amounts of truck traffic associated with the wells on rural two-lane roads.
Thanks for talking about that. I feel like fracking is such a hot button kind of topic. I mean, I live in Asheville where there's like no fracking signs everywhere, and I feel like it's kind of a catch-all, and I think it's important to remember that other tactics are used by like large extraction companies. So thanks for talking about that. Will you talk a little bit about the action camp, which is coming up? Registration is closed as of now, but additionally, if people want to get involved, how can they?
Well, one of the things, I mean, we had a time where we were really hoping people would RSVP by just so that we could get a rough head count so that we could provide enough food and have a sense of the scope. But people can totally still come. So it's not a hard deadline. And yeah, so, and at this point, we're looking at probably around 50 to 60 people coming. And this action camp is a social and environmental justice action camp. And the genesis of doing a combined, like, multi-issue camp came about from several people within our group were also doing organizing with other groups and participating in mostly Black Lives Matter actions. And we were revisiting kind of who we were and what we were doing. And part of our guiding principles were already working in solidarity with social justice groups. And we wanted to start making that a more practiced part of what we did. And then we were also then right after that starting to plan this action camp. And so we decided to go ahead and put the principle into practice. And so that's what we came up with. So it's going to be exciting, I think. Like I'm pretty thrilled with the way that the camp has come together in terms of the like mix of issues and who all is coming to participate and present.
Sounds really exciting. What are some of the what are some of the trainings which are scheduled to take place?
Well, there's some that are fairly common at environmental justice and environmental movement related action camps, so blockades and direct action, and one that's on meeting process and how to have a productive meeting. But yeah, which is good.
Yeah, I want to go to that. Yeah.
Well, we fortunately have a local expert, and so we pull on her a lot. Her name is Marty Zinn, and she worked with the Movement for a New Society, which was in Philadelphia ages and ages ago, so as in the 60s, and has focused on training activists to be more effective. So we're lucky to have her. And then we're having a series of sort of specific anti-oppression workshops as part of this. So as opposed to umbrellas, there's going to be one that's done by What's Up Pittsburgh, which started as a group of white people who were working on unlearning racism and then became multicultural, that's like what they do as an organization, is anti-racist training. And so they're doing What's Trump Got to Do with It? White supremacy, structural racism, and the prison system. And then there's a social worker that does a lot of anti-homophobia, queer, like cultural competency related trainings. It's Delphine Bautista, and they're going to do rainbow intersectionality and queering privilege. And it's a lot about intersectionality, period. Delphine is Cuban and maybe another Latin American nationality, which I'm blanking on. Mostly I hear about the Cuban mom, somebody I know. And then there's also some students that are working on any anti-racist trainings, and they'll also be doing a workshop where they're going to have people do activities, see how it goes. So it's kind of us helping them set up the training. And then there's a divestment roundtable, which was kind of an exciting thing to put together because we realized that we knew people who had done apartheid divestment campaigns in the past. And then there's a public university in the area, and the Student Sierra Coalition had done a divestment campaign. And then it's looking like people who have done prison divestment are going to be able to join from that. So a nice multi-issue roundtable around that. So, and then there's more, but those are some of the ones that I can think of at the moment.
That is an extremely eclectic group of trainings or like roundtables or discussions that are slated to happen. That sounds really, really cool. And Appalachia Resist is pretty rooted in direct action. Is that true?
Yeah, that's mostly what we do. Sometimes we do something a little bit less direct action oriented just because sometimes it can be hard to, there's only nine of us, and sometimes it can be hard to put ourselves in arrestable positions on a regular basis. So sometimes we do things that are a little bit less direct action, but we're always pushy.
Definitely. I'm trying to formulate a question because I like find the bent of the action camp to be super, super interesting, especially like given the like hard direct action like past of Appalachia Resist, but I can't really think of a way to ask it. But maybe this is just for you. I find that really, really cool.
Well, I was just gonna say one of the things that's kind of interesting about our group is that people come from some pretty interesting backgrounds. So we're all activists that have activist histories, but we're figuring out of the nine of us, there were really only two that came from direct action environmental movement. And then, like, most of my time as an activist was spent doing work with the Lesbian Avengers, which was a kind of theatrics, get on TV as often as possible group in the 90s primarily. But it was another one of the sort of like decentralized, there were a bunch of them all over the country. So, and I mostly focused on queer related activism for years. And then another member in the group used to be really active around countering KKK in this area. Another person in the group has been a peace activist for many, many, many years. And so it's just like a lot of us come from, you know, social justice backgrounds in terms of our activism, I guess you could say. And so it ends up informing what we do, even though what we're focusing on specifically is fracking and keeping frack waste out of the county and off the Ohio River. Barging on the Ohio River frack waste has been an issue we've been working on.
Do you have any recommendations for attendees about like things to keep in mind about like respecting the space or anything that you want to, you know, describe to like attendees that are coming to the camp who might be listening to this?
Well, there's going to be camping, and it's looking like next weekend is actually going to be pretty chilly, so nights down in maybe into the mid-30s. And the space that we're going to be using is nice, but not luxury accommodations, and it may be kind of chilly. So dress warm. It is southeastern Ohio in the spring, which means there is mud everywhere. And so there's also a possibility that lawn's going to be fairly wet. So that's kind of a practical end. Bring snacks that you like. And then we are going to have a anti-oppression and consent policy that is in. And so, and it's longer, but just sort of in terms of like how to think about how to bring your best self to the camp so that we can be as welcoming and comfortable for everybody who attends. And so maybe I'll just read a likely snippet of it. It hasn't been finalized yet. But behavior that demeans, marginalizes, rejects, threatens, or harms any living being on the basis of ability, activist experience, age, class, income level, cultural background, education, ethnicity, gender, immigration status, language, nationality, physical appearance, race, religion, self-expression, sexual orientation, or status as a parent will not be tolerated. And so we're encouraging everybody to speak out against such behavior so that we can collectively create a safer space for all. And then, you know, there's language around what we mean by safer space, but, you know, that's going to be a document that we go over at the camp as well.
Safer space can look like, you know, so many things depending on, like, what people need out of it or what people are bringing to the table and stuff. Do you need any donations, like money donations, as far as food and resources go?
I think we had a, I think we said like a sliding scale from 5 to 20 or 5 to whatever you want, really.
Right.
But no one will be turned away for lack of funds, obviously.
And as far as the, like, non-attending community, for, like, people who might be listening to this interview who can't come for whatever reason, who'd like to donate, is that a possibility?
Yeah,
there's that button. I can't remember what it's called.
I think it's Make a Donation, and it goes into a PayPal account or something along those lines. It's on our website, and I think you can get to it from our Facebook page, too.
Gotcha. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I am your host for today, William Goodenough. We're speaking with members of the Southern Ohio-based group Appalachia Resist about their upcoming action camp. Their website, if you haven't already caught it, is appalachiaresist.wordpress.com. It's my understanding that Appalachia Resist is a project which is very centered in its community and location. Will you speak about that community as much as you'd like to and how the group holds its stances against racism, homophobia, imperialism, and the prison industrial complex?
So in terms of where we're located, so we're in occupied Shawnee territory, which is in southeast Ohio. Athens County is our focus, although we also work with surrounding counties as well. And this is primarily white, a lot of poor people, but there is also a mid-sized public university that is in town that is by far the largest employer for the area. I think it goes OU, the schools, and then Walmart. So that gives you a pretty good sense of of what the area is like in some ways. But it's also a community where in the mid-70s, Mother Earth News did an article listing it as like one of the 5 best places in the country to homestead and do the back to the land thing. And so a bunch of people moved here in the late 70s, including my parents. I currently live at a women's intentional community that was founded in 79. The intentional community that we're close to both relationally as well as physically also formed, I think, in 78 or 79. And there's a bunch of them in the area. And it's also an area where the people who came to do the back to the land thing ended up integrating into the rural community pretty seamlessly. Like, we're friends with all our neighbors, and I know the names of everybody who lives on our street. Granted, there aren't that many of them, but it's kind of an interesting community. And so lots of, there's a decent amount of farming here. It's hilly terrain, so it's not great for huge farms. So there's a lot of smaller family farms where people tend to also work other jobs, and then the university. And then the other piece of that question is about holding its stance, you know, how our group holds its stance against racism, homophobia, imperialism, and the prison industrial complex. I mean, it's answering that is kind of an interesting question because we are really pretty focused and intentionally so on just the fracking, frack waste in the area. But integrated into who we are is a solidarity statement. It's definitely a group that works hard to be accommodating, I guess would be the way to say it, or maybe I'm not sure how to quite say it, but like we have a really wide range of ages of people involved. We were talking about this the other day, and it's everywhere from the 20s to the 70s. And we don't have anybody in their 50s right now, or 60s, I think it was, right now. But otherwise, we have all those decades represented. And I'm a queer, and everybody's been really nice to me about that, and it's not been a big deal at all. So within the group, we try and sort of create that space, for sure. And then because this community, this community is not one where, in a lot of our trainings that we've done for the local region, we have pretty easily introduced things like having people state pronouns that people should use to refer to them when they're introducing themselves. And people don't even really blink. I mean, they do blink, but then they roll with it. And then, all of us also, I think I mentioned, have other things that we also are working on within the social justice world, including some people working on prisons-related stuff.
I just wanted to add that, like Chris has said, there's a pretty good, nearly seamless, pretty good relationship that a lot of us newcomers being, anywhere from 40 years back, not considering people who've lived here for generations, and we've developed a lot of really good relationships in the community, and we work with a lot of different kinds of people, and it's actually the first community that I've ever lived in where I didn't feel like the liberals were waiting to stab me in the back at any moment. So we've done some, coalition work with some of the more liberal groups in town, and we're always very, very upfront and very forward about our radical beliefs about prisons and direct action. And basically, it's like what Chris has said, is that, people who previously either hadn't given a lot of thought to prisons and, prison abolition and other things like that, when we talk about them, we've developed these relationships of mutual respect. And I think that it's really, when we say these things, people don't just roll their eyes, and people start thinking about it because they respect us, which is a thing that, I've lived in a number of different places where the liberal groups have become nearly our enemies. So it's really nice being here and having them be excited about the radical things that we're into.
That is really, really cool. How do you think about why that is? Do you think that it's because of the relative size of the town, or because of how you are approaching your politics vis-a-vis the more liberal groups? What do you think about that?
I think that a big part of it is also that we have, in various ways, a lot of the liberals in this community border on being radicals. They're not your, I lived near Eugene, Oregon for a while, and it was a completely different kind of liberal. And I think that the people in this community that we've worked with against fracking, I mean, they've been really excited. They felt like we were doing what they wanted to do. And so I think a big part of it is on us having a long-standing relationship in this community. Another previous project that I was involved in this community was we had an info shop. We also have various anarchist projects that are free and open to all. We have a bike co-op and we used to have an info shop. And so over the years, people have gotten to know us, and people are like, oh yeah, they're the anarchists, and whatever. And we're just accepted as a part of the community. And I think that when it came down to this fracking stuff, they realized that we were doing exactly what they wanted to do. And I think that because they see us as, members of their community and not sort of you know, because also when I lived in Eugene, I mean, we were often viewed as kind of like parachute activists. I mean, you know, I wasn't there for a terribly long time, and I was, you know, part of environmental campaigns. But there is something to the fact, and also to the fact that, like Krista was saying, there's a woman in her 70s in our group who has done peace work in the Middle East for years. And, you know, having her as part of our group gives us cred among anyone in Athens County and beyond. I mean, she's, you know, one of the most well-respected members of the community. And she's a great asset to the group. She's great to have in the group in so many ways. But, yeah, I feel lucky to be part of a group that has so many different kinds of people. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it, but that's a big part of it.
That definitely sounds incredible, and it sounds like a super vital, you know, vital meaning, like full of life group. And I also have to say that I personally am relating so hard to what y'all are saying about where you live, because I grew up in Appalachian Pennsylvania, which is like it borders Ohio, but I live on the like other side of Pennsylvania, and everything you're saying about where y'all are is, you know, sounds almost exactly where I'm from, even down to what kind of liberals there are there, because the liberals that are there are like old anti-nuke hippies who like protested Vietnam. And I'm sure that if an anarchist politic were introduced into that town, it would be more readily accepted than it would be by, say, the liberals in Asheville, who are way, way, way more center, way more about green capitalism and Priuses and stuff like that than like engaging with politics in a vibrant way. So it's just like doing my heart some good to hear y'all talk about where you're at. I guess to move on, I've been hearing recently a lot about forming tighter bonds between the various forms of radical and anarchist organizing in the United States. Appalachia Resist has a few words about this topic, and you've spoken a lot about how the workshops in the Action Camp are going to go down, and I think that those speak for themselves, but would you speak about this topic if y'all care to?
I think Krista kind of alluded to this earlier, and I think one of the things we, like Krista said, it was in our solidarity statement that we wanted to be, or in our guiding principles, that we wanted to be in solidarity with other people struggling against, you know, the white patriarchal capitalist system all around the world. And so a sort of a catalyst for actually trying to move towards creating stronger bonds among, you know, what is considered other movements, but is that my partner and I and my son went to a Black Lives Matter rally in Cincinnati, and the weather was horrible. It was like freezing rain and blowing wind. And so very few people actually turned out, unfortunately. But they had like 6 or 7 different groups of like a Free Palestine group and radical feminist group and a group of Muslim representing Muslim Americans and a group representing Hispanic workers in Cincinnati. And so all these groups got up and spoke about solidarity with Black Lives Matter. And I was saddened that there was no one there to say, hey, we're part of an environmental movement and we're in solidarity with this Black Lives Matter movement and this Black Lives Matter rally, and we think this is really important. And I think that it's frustrated me for a long time, and you know, and I've been part of Earth First, and I go to Earth First gatherings, and it's been a big point of contention at Earth First rendezvous over the years, especially the last handful of years, but recurring for decades now, that the environmental movement doesn't, you know, branch out and make the bonds that it should. And I hear a lot of liberal environmental movements asking, how do we, you know, diversify the environmental movement? And our goal here is not to diversify the environmental movement or Appalachia Resist or the anti-fracking movement or anything like that. Our goal here is to, with this camp and with future work of trying to be in better solidarity with racial and social justice movements is that, you know, and this is another thing that came from the Earth First Rendezvous, a black woman from Vermont spoke that, you know, her white liberal friends in Vermont love to go down for the, like, anti-Keystone XL pipeline. They'll go all the way down to D.C. They'll, like, organize all these carpools and rent vans and do all this stuff. But she said they won't go down for stop and frisk rallies, you know, and marches and stuff like that in New York City. And so I think what we're hoping to do is push ourselves to go out of our way and make the trip to Columbus, Cincinnati, Cleveland, you know, and put ourselves in the streets with people and say, we're here. It's important enough, you know, like we're organizing against fracking, but we want to support what other people are doing. Because to me, it's from an anarchist perspective and an anti-capitalist perspective, you know, what we're looking at is exploitation on all levels. And, you know, there's ton of words for it, exploitation, oppression, whatever. And what it comes down to is that, you know, it's a capitalist authoritarian system that, you know, is feeding on the lives of Black people and poor people and indigenous people and the earth and women. And it's a system built on exploitation. And so what I want to be able to tell people is the solidarity is in the fact that, yeah, I want to show up to what other people are organizing, and I want to be involved and be helpful where I can in what's considered other movements. But to me, it's all one movement. It's a movement against capitalism and authoritarianism. I want to live in a world where, you know, when a new project is proposed, when legislation is passed, I don't want to live in a world where legislation is passed. But the problem to me is that, you know, who's going to get f***ed. You know, it's like the police, there's a direction for violence and it goes down and down and down and it's passed down. And I want to live in a world where it's a surprise. I don't know if that's really coherent, but I don't like living in a world where I know who's getting shit on and why they're getting shit on, because it's systematic. And so I'm going to ramble a little bit here, but also I think there's a real one-to-one connection that came up last week, which is that Berta Cáceres in, I believe, Honduras, Berta Cáceres was working on palm oil plantations, sure, was assassinated in her home. And, you know, that's one-to-one correlation. You know, it's just, basically, they're building a hydro dam, you know, to sell offset carbon. Nobody there wants the electricity. They're you know, kicking out 1,000 people, you know, flooding out 1,000 people or more who are living off the land. They're growing food. They're small farmers. And so green capitalism is not a solution, right? The exploitation is getting passed on, because in this system, we know who's getting shit. And so, to me, all these fights are won. And I think what it takes to build the trust is for those of us with the privilege of myself being a white man and, you know, being part of this environmental movement for years and knowing that there's a lot of other people in the environmental movement, not everyone by all means, but there's a lot of vocal people in the environmental movement pushing for the environmental movement to stay isolated. And they come from, by and large, they come from very privileged backgrounds. And I think to build the trust we need to build the movement we actually need to build to win this thing and to make the world a better place and a livable place for everyone, we need to build that trust by showing up and being earnest about it, what I think.
Definitely. And more egalitarian ways of spreading the out means other things as well, too. It means everything's perhaps more egalitarianly distributed. And I think that that's a really good, you know, model for a world, because, you know, shit's going to always exist. You know, people are always going to be terrible to each other. You know, all of this stuff is always going to be true, but it doesn't have to be the way it is now. And Krissa, do you have anything to add to that?
necessarily. Like, I tend to mm-hmm. think about it in very practical terms as opposed to instead of the sort of overreaching. Like, I agree with what Kuze just said, but, you know, in terms of practical terms, if people, you know, like most of us care about many issues, you know, so, but I think picking whatever it is that you feel either the most imminent threat from or passionate about means that you are going to be able to act and sustain for longer and longer. And so I tend to be a cheerleader of anybody working on anything to make the world a safer, fairer place, no matter what it is. And so I think it's important that people recognize that when you spend time trying to, like, convince other people that your issue is more important than the one that they're working on, that there's something, like, particularly messed up about that. So I think that some of that, like, forming tighter bonds, like, some of the skill-based stuff we can all use, you know? So, like, I'm really excited when we can offer trainings and when we make sure that we offer those not just to other environmental groups, but that we reach out to all activists in the community so that everybody ends up having us, you know, their skill set improved, including us, right? So it's like, and then if people are doing something particularly well, like asking them to share so that we are sort of raising the collective bar, so to speak. And then when people do cross-movement organizing or are at least cognizant of it within their group, you create space within that group for people to be able to join it too. Like, I just think back to when I was in my late teens, I was kind of on the edges of some people who were working with Earth First groups, and I had such a negative impression of them. Like, I just wasn't, you know, it felt really macho and really white. And I was like, I'm not going anywhere near that, you know. And the only other women that were involved seemed to be the girlfriends of admittedly very attractive young men. But, you know, there wasn't a big appeal for me there. But then at the Earth First Rendezvous, which was my first contact with Earth First 3 years ago, so almost 20 years elapsed before I was reintroduced, the fact that there was an anti-oppression statement and that there were anti-racist workshops and there was a group for men working on misogyny, and I was like, whoa, you know, okay, so I might be willing to be affiliated with this. And it was because that kind of internal work had been done that it created enough space for me to feel like I could work with people. And I think that kind of work is really important.
Definitely. You know, and work that will probably never be done. And maybe it should never be done, you know? And I think that working to fight against, like, all of these things that were acculturated into, like, misogyny and homophobia and racism and all of these things is an ongoing process. And I think that, yeah, definitely. I feel like I could talk to y'all about this for a really long time, but I will probably go on to the last question, which is, how can people learn more information about this action camp and keep updated on further actions or action camps that Appalachia Resist does?
Well, certainly you can join our email list. So we only send out like a handful of emails every year. Well, maybe it's a little more than a handful, but we don't bomb people with lots of information. It's always really specific things that we're planning or specific asks. And our email address is appalachiaresist@gmail.com. And then we also have a Facebook page that we're pretty good at updating, and it's just Appalachia Resist. And then we do have a website. The person who is really good at doing the website is no longer a part of the group. He moved. And so it's there, but it's not pretty. So, and it's a WordPress blog, so you can actually join it too. And then when there's new posts, you'll get those notifications. But it's appalachiaresist.wordpress.com.
Thank you both so much for coming onto the air. I really enjoy talking to y'all, and best of luck with the Action Camp.
Thank you. It was actually a pretty fun interview. So thank you.
One last thing before I let y'all go. We usually score the shows with music. Is there any music that you would really like to hear?
Wow.
I know. Kusa and I, we both like Taylor Swift. Which is going to do nothing for a, like, racist stance at the moment. You should have said no. You should have gone home. You should have thought twice before you let it all go. You should have known the word. But what you did with her, get back to me.
Taylor Swift had me from her first kiss. I just got the radio in my truck, and it's just like, that's all I got.
All right.
It's like,
that's all you need.
Talk radio or pop radio.
You
should have said no. Baby, and you might still have me.
You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville, specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. A link to some of Firestorm's partial catalog of books and zines, and also a full listing of their calendar of events, can be found online at their website at firestorm.coop. We've been speaking with two members of the Southern Ohio-based group Appalachia Resist, which is a social and environmental justice crew, which focuses primarily on fracking, frack waste, and injection drilling. We've been speaking about their action camp, which is to be held next weekend from March 18th through 21st. And you can attend if you so desire to. Registration was closed, but I think that they have foregone that formality. You should visit their website, appalachiaresist.wordpress.com, for more information and directions, and for more information about the group itself. So to take us out, we are going to have Wild's Reprisal, the last track off of their 2012 release, Cascadia Rising. They are an environmental justice-minded metal group from the Northwest. And the track is called Silent Spring. Oh,
artificial world of his own creation, has sought to insulate himself in the cities of steel and concrete, away from the realities of earth, water, the growing sea, and intoxicated with the sense of his own power. He seems to be going farther and farther into experiments toward the destruction of himself and his world. There's sadly no single remedy for this condition, and I can offer no benefit. But it seems reasonable to me, and I do, that the more clearly we can focus our attention on the world, and the realities of this universe about us, the less taste we shall have for its destruction.
You've been listening to Antlers with the third track off of their album, A Gaze Into the Abyss, called Hundreds. It's a song which we've played before, but is good anyway. That album came out in 2015.